Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So this will not surprise you or probably land as much of a bombshell, but a new study links too much screen time to poor speech skills in preschoolers, published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics and led by Dr. John Hutton, director of the Reading and Literacy Discovery Center at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Researchers found the connection after comparing certain brain activities in kids against their screen exposure. The findings, of course, join a whole collection of research showing that the child brain, your brain on screens, if you will, harms development. But with this area of research in particular, speech, it's still in its infancy. Just how complete is our understanding of digital technology's impact on young minds and parents? How do you manage screen time with your young kids? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, as we are joined by Perry Klass, here to explain the study and take your questions. Perry Klass is the National Medical Director of Reach Out and Read, a national literacy organization that promotes reading to young children. She also writes about health for the New York Times. Hi, Dr. Klass. Thanks for coming on today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So what's your understanding from this study, and is it new, regarding what's happening to a preschooler's brain during screen time?
So I think I'd like to make a couple of points about this study, about what is new. First of all, it's a more sophisticated way of looking at screen time. That is to say, we're not just looking at how many minutes or hours a day these preschoolers are spending in front of the screen. We're looking at something much more nuanced. It's a measure that's been developed over the last couple of years and validated, called a screen Q, as in IQ, which looks at how families are doing in following the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations on screen time for children. So it's how young the child started watching. It's how many hours a day the child watches. It's whether there's co-viewing, which is a strong recommendation with young children, that if they're going to spend time in front of the screen, you watch with them and talk about what you're seeing. So the measure is not just the amount of time a young child is spending in front of the screen, though that's important, but it's the trying to get a bigger picture of how that family is using screens. And what they did was look at how those measures, the screen cues in these healthy, English-speaking, middle-class, upper-middle-class preschool children, how that correlated with two things. One were these very sophisticated brain scans, diffusion tensor images that let you look at the white matter of the brain very carefully. And the other, with the same children, was some tests of their cognitive ability. And what they were looking at was how the screen use correlated with both what you could see in their brains and also how they performed on these tests of speech and rapid naming.
Do you find the research convincing?
I think what anyone would say about this is I find the research concerning. I think that's all anyone's trying to say about this. We're talking about 47 children. We're talking about really the first study ever to look at structural brain associations with screen use. So it's a huge question, and it's getting bigger and bigger as screens become more and more important in all our lives, not just the children, but the parents. And what I think we want to say about this is we know that young brains are very much shaped by everyday experience. We have a whole new category of experience, which is on the increase and which we can see is very seductive, at least for some young children and for some families. And what we're saying here is there seems to be an association. It's not cause and effect. It's an association between the children who are having the most exposure, the most unregulated exposure, the most exposure without co-viewing, the earliest exposure. These tracts, these white matter tracts in their brains, which are so important for language and speech and literacy skills, those tracts seem to be less well organized, less dense, less myelinated, and those same children who have the greater screen presence in their lives, they're doing less well on these tests of speech and language.
One thing that you've said so far that jumped out at me is that it's not just the amount of screen time, it's the nature of the screen time. And if I heard you correctly, you suggested that parents should be in there kind of mediating screen time with their kids, especially very young kids, kind of helping them interpret what they're seeing and what the experience is, which unfortunately goes against probably the very real way that a lot of parents use screen time, which is to get a little break from intensive interaction.
That's absolutely true. And again, I want to be clear that nothing that the authors of this study are saying or that I'm saying is you're a bad parent if you do this, or I'm absolutely not saying we have evidence that screens are damaging the brain. What we're saying is, look, we know what young brains do need. They need interaction. They need sort of real world exposure. They need back and forth questions, conversation. We have to make sure that nothing squeezes that out for young children. So I think that's the first thing to say. The first thing to say to parents is, of course, everybody understands that sometimes you need a break. But if what we're using for a break is so appealing, so seductive, so well designed, that for some children at least, it becomes a very, very hard to resist call, they would always rather be doing this, that we have to start worrying that what that is squeezing out of a young child's life is the opportunity for sort of family back and forth, for actual play in the actual world, for being outside, for having those ridiculous, repetitive conversations that you have with your child when you pass a construction site. All of that, which we know is what builds a young child's brain.
If you're just joining us, my guest is pediatrician, author, New York Times contributor, and NYU professor of journalism and pediatrics, Perry Klass, with us to explain and take your questions about the new study that links too much screen time to poor speech skills in preschoolers. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Nick in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Dr. Klass. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I was just wondering if the study accounts for different content. For instance, the difference between something that's kind of mindless entertainment like Barney and something more educational and interactive like Blue's Clues or Word World.
It's a great question, and it's, again, just part of what we still have to learn about screens and young children. It has to do with that content difference. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation, which is no screen time for children under 18 months, with the possible exception of, you know, video chatting with grandma, and that for children 18 to 24 months, very limited screen time, only with a parent co-viewing, and then after that, on to the age of 5, an hour a day of high-quality content. And I think what you're going to find is that the parents who are particular, probably by and large, who are particularly scrupulous about regulating the screen time are also probably the parents who are paying closest attention to the content. In this screen cue measure that they use, there is some attention to content. For example, the question of whether children are free to watch violent content, which is, again, something that gets at the question of how closely parents are supervising. And I think I think that we can say that that kind of interactive educational content, especially if you've got a parent there watching it with you and at least some of the time building on it, so you were doing counting, so you were doing letters, so what happened there, if you're using it as an occasion for back and forth in conversation, that's probably the best possible use in a preschooler's life. But again, my guess is that the parents who are paying most attention to screen time are probably also the parents who are being most scrupulous about the content.
Well, do you have an opinion, and I think the caller's question gets to this to some degree, an opinion about whether there's a qualitative difference for little kids between, say, watching television, which is passive, and interacting with a phone or an iPad where they may be having to make decisions and click on things and swipe on things and being a participant?
So I think we know that for sort of the slightly older children, the early school age children, there's definitely a difference. And I don't want to make it sound like everything that comes out of the screen is terrible. We also have some pretty good evidence that, again, starting around school age, there are things which children learn really well on screens, and that that back and forth and reinforcement and kind of game aspect can work really well, at least in limited doses. I think the concern in this study is with the very young, with the children who are still learning to talk, the two-year-olds and the three-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's not just a question of what the screens put in, it's a question of what they replace. So if you're following these guidelines and there's an hour a day of playing games on a screen, I definitely go for the educational content, definitely go for the interactive. The problem is if there's so much of it because it's so well designed and so appealing and so seductive that it's actually taking over what should be the time playing in other ways, going outside, squabbling with your siblings, negotiating with your parents, hearing them explain the world. Mm-hmm. So that's, mm-hmm. And again, I think those are two different issues. One is, let's get the best possible content on the screens. The other is, let's make sure it doesn't squeeze out the other things that we know children need when they're very young.
Sheila and Darianne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So my daughter has been in speech therapy since she was three because of what now we understand is some processing issues and some word retrieval problems. And sadly, yes, she was watching TV because I had another young child who's older. The older child obviously didn't, I co-watched with her, and I kind of couldn't 100% with the younger one. So I'm not saying that that's the exact reason, but she has become slightly addicted to the Nickelodeon and the Disney kid shows, the teenage, you know, the school shows, those shows. And she's adopted the behavior of the girls. And she does all this kind of stuff that isn't my daughter. When she's mad or frustrated, she starts to act like one of those characters and just having like really short, snappy little exaggerated answers for everything and bopping her head back and forth. And it's not really just a question, but more, well, should I just completely cut off the Nickelodeon and the Disney? Because she's 10 now. She kind of keeps doing it. And she still is in speech. You know, she's still having speech work in school. But it's kind of funny when I heard the pediatrician talking about it. It's like, wow. That's my daughter.
Dr. Klass, can you help Sheila with any advice?
Well, I don't want to tell you to take away the things that, you know, she likes and then to absolutely be the bad guy. I'd probably advise setting some pretty careful limits. But the most important thing I would say to you is now that she's older and now this is happening, watch it with her and talk about it and make her aware that you notice these patterns. Oh, that's what the kid on TV did. That's one of those snappy short answers. Oh, you know, I think you were trying to be her. Make it part of your conversation so that if she's going to be a little bit in, and I mean, if you told me she was watching, you know, hideously violent adult content, of course I would be saying to you, no, you have to stop it. But if she's 10 and she's watching what you think is reasonable content and you've got some reasonable limits on the amount of time she's watching it, then the next step is you as a parent get in there a little bit with her so it becomes part of your frame of reference together, because that's going to matter as she gets older, as she gets into the middle school years, and you're going to be interested in what kind of information and what kind of behavior is coming her way. And she can hear that you have an opinion, and your opinion, even though, you know, with 10-year-old girls, you are getting into the eye-rolling stage, the truth is your opinion does matter, and the thing that some of us used to say to our parents is like, you know, no matter what I do, I still hear your voice in my head making comments. That's part of what we're there to do with our preteen and teenage children around the screen time stuff. These pictures and these images and these patterns are being beamed at you, but I'm your mother and I've got an opinion.
Sheila, I hope that helps. Pascal in Jericho, you're on WNYC with Dr. Perry Klass. Hi, Pascal.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love the show,
thank
and
you.
I read Dr. Klass's articles often on the Times. So I'm actually a child psychiatrist, and I'm pretty up to date with the research on this, but kind of trying to convince my parents, who are quite educated and who watch my child, it's kind of frustrating. They're a bit dismissive and saying, you know, you turned out fine. You watch TV all the time. How do I manage and navigate this and sort of convince them that, you know, you need to really limit this because they're the primary caretakers, and I'm so glad that my son is with them, but there's a lot of screen and, you know, YouTube videos on, and how do we do that?
And Dr. Klass, this could relate to, I think, a million things with parents of kids today and the generation above who maybe aren't so determined to set certain limits with respect to screens or foods or lots of things and say, you turned out fine.
Well, you know, I used to have this argument with my parents about car seats. When my kids were little and my parents were around, they used to sort of say, oh, you were always just fine in mom's lap. Isn't that the safest place? And, you know, so some of what you decide is you have to pick your battles. That was a battle I picked. I was, you know, sort of like, I know you think this is ridiculous. I know you never did it and we were all fine. But he doesn't go in the car unless he's in the car seat. And, you know, you can sort of exchange glances and say, oh, our daughter is a little bit wacko, but this still is something we have to do. On the other hand, I think that with grandparents, especially grandparents who are helping you out a lot, you can't just make absolute rules. You can say to them, these are the things which are actually most important to me. You can also perhaps try to talk to them about the way that media has changed, the way that screens have changed, and about the really incredibly careful engineering which goes into creating some of the things which a 3-year-old can't put down, a 4-year-old can't put down, because you can look around you and see the 15-year-old who can't put the screen down, and in fact the 50-year-old who can't put the screen down. And it's possible that I don't know, but it's possible that the grandparents in question can see that it doesn't look nice in a restaurant when there are sort of teenagers at the table who can't look up at their parents, or when there's a couple in a restaurant who can't look at each other because they're so tied to their screens. And the point is not that these people are bad. The point is that they are using materials which have been very, very carefully and skillfully engineered to make it very hard to put them down. And the same thing is happening to our children, and we have to be a little protective.
On the difference between the parents' view and the grandparents' view in that case, would social scientists have anything that you call survivor's bias? Like, you came out okay, and that creates a certain kind of bias in how to look at the world?
Yeah, I think that's true. And, of course, you know, people who study technology will point out that whenever a new technology comes along, there is sometimes a certain amount of, you know, terror, worry, agony, you know, jumping to the worst case scenario. And again, when I talk about this study and when I talk about screen time, I really want to make it clear that I'm not sort of saying to parents, you know, you did something bad, you're doing something wrong. What I'm trying to say is, don't let it squeeze out what's really important, which is you, the parents, or you, the grandparents, which is the playing and the real world and the reading aloud and the looking at books and the talking. And that, don't let that disappear just because the screens have been engineered to be as sticky as they are.
We're just about out of time. I wonder if you can give us one brief thought on methodology, because I've read that people in this field say studies on media usage in child development are hard to conduct. Do you think that's right?
They're very hard to conduct because, you know, your callers have brought up such good questions in terms of the sort of the nuances of what children are seeing on the screen. And children are moving targets because, so a 2-year-old looking at something on the screen is not the same child as he'll be 3 years later looking at this. It's very hard to tease all of that out. And one of the things which the researcher of this study said to me is, next time I'm going to get more information on the parent screen habits, because this is all happening in the context of a family and what's going on. going on in that family. The last thing I would say about this is the thing I always come back to is that when you've got a young child, you as the parent, you as the grandparent, you as the caretaker, you are the center of that young child's world, and you should feel that power and influence and kind of glory in the fact that even just silly conversation back and forth, reading the same books over and over again, we know have tremendous potential to shape the child's brain.
Pediatrician, New York Times contributor, and NYU professor of journalism and pediatrics, Dr. Perry Klass, thank you so much.
Thank you.